Good morning. And I'd like to thank the American Horticultural Society and Angela for this award. As Angela told you, I'm the fifth generation of my family to run our family business. McElhenney Company was founded in 1868 by my great-great-grandfather, Edmund McElhenney, and we'll talk about that in a second. My family actually has been at Avery Island since 1818. We grew sugarcane at Avery Island as our primary crop until Tabasco came along. But we're going to do a little presentation about Avery Island, and I'll talk to you a little bit about our history and what we do.
There's a phrase that is often repeated here. The land has been good to us, so we're good to it. The land is Avery Island, Louisiana. Blessed with fertile soil, decorated by Mother Nature and Spanish moss, and standing above a most useful salt dome. The environment and resources give it purpose. Its geology makes it a world of its own. For five generations, our family company has worked this land to grow our heirloom pepper seedlings, use salt from our mine, and produce a product that is desired around the world. We've also worked to replant marshes, care for our fields, and follow a nothing-wasted approach to creating our pepper sauce. We share this island with indigenous animals and plants. In 1895, Bird City was founded and built by McElhenney family members to help provide safe habitat for the then-endangered snowy egret. Those egrets return each spring to nest. And in 1935, Jungle Gardens was opened to showcase local and exotic flowers and plants among enduring oak trees. Avery Island is not just a sanctuary for plants and birds, but also for a way of life. Our products and our people are intertwined with the food and lifestyle of Cajun country. This is where we work, but it's also where we fish the bayous, get our hands dirty, and call home. We're proud of the Tabasco pepper sauce we've made since the 1800s, and we're just as proud of the place where we come from. It's a place where traditions are preserved, and so too is the land.
So that's Avery Island. We'll talk about it a little more in a minute. This is Edmund McElhenney, my great-great-grandfather. Edmund invented Tabasco. Edmund actually was a banker who lived here in New Orleans. He owned five independent banks in southwest Louisiana, and as he traveled around to his various branches, he became friends with a man named Judge Daniel Avery, who had sugarcane plantation at Avery Island, Louisiana. Edmund was about 40 years old in 1859 when Judge Avery's daughter, Mary Eliza, turned 20. And at that point, Edmund announced to his good friend that he actually was secretly in love with his daughter. Edmund was a bachelor and would like to get married. It did not go over very well. Judge Avery was not enthusiastic about his 20-year-old daughter marrying his 40-year-old friend, but Mary Eliza finally convinced her father to let the marriage go ahead, and in 1859 they wed. Edmund invented Tabasco for himself. He did not like the taste of food without spice. He enjoyed spice in his food. He invented the product to use on his own food, but during the Civil War, Avery Island became a strategic place because they found rock salt in the ground. Salt was being blockaded by the North because it was a strategic product at that point for preserving food and other things you do with salt. So the family was forced to flee Avery Island during the war because it was occupied by federal forces for the duration of the war. When Edmund came back to Avery Island at the end of the war, his diary tells us he found one of his Tabasco pepper plants still growing at the side of the chicken coop. And every Tabasco plant in the world that we grow comes from seeds from that one plant. This is a picture of a Tabasco plant in full bloom. And as you can see, on any given bush, there's yellow pepper, there's green pepper, there's orange pepper, there's red pepper, and there's bright red pepper. We have an all-natural product. There's only three things in our product: red Tabasco pepper mash, vinegar, and a little bit of salt. We have no way to change the color of the product once we grind the mash into, or grind the peppers into a mash. So we can only use the reddest, ripest peppers. So we have to go back through the fields over and over and over again, only picking the ripe pepper and allowing the rest of the pepper to ripen on the vine before it can be picked. The only thing that can do that currently is a human. We still grow approximately 15 acres of pepper on Avery Island, which is primarily an R&D project for us. Most of our pepper is now grown in Central and South America. We grow in Honduras, we grow in Nicaragua, we grow in Guatemala, Panama, Ecuador, Peru, and Colombia. In addition to that, we are doing a test plot in the Dominican Republic. We grow pepper in South Africa, and we've been speaking with some people about possibly growing pepper for us in Vietnam. But this is where it all started. It started with Edmund coming back after the Civil War, finding one of his plants growing by the chicken coop, beginning to make Tabasco for himself. And at that point, he had lost everything in the Civil War. He was destitute. He was forced to live in his father-in-law's house at Avery Island because he couldn't support his wife and his children. So as he would go to New Orleans to try to find work, people encouraged him to begin to bottle Tabasco and put it for sale in New Orleans, which he did. And by 1868, he decided there was enough momentum for him to create a company. So he created McElhenney Company in 1868, and we are still a family-owned and operated business 147 years later. Excuse me, I gotta go back. There you go. Edmund died in 1890. When he died in 1890, remember, he was a banker. He kept extremely meticulous records. We know that in his lifetime, he produced about 360,000 bottles of Tabasco during his lifetime. When he died, he was succeeded by his oldest son, John McElhenney. But John resigned in 1898 to join Theodore Roosevelt and become a Rough Rider. When he did that, his younger brother, E.A. McElhenney, shown here in his Arctic furs, was just returning from a year and a half at Point Barrow, Alaska, where he was doing research. He had to cut his trip short because he actually helped save the whaling fleet that got trapped in the ice at Point Barrow, and EA used up all of his stores to save the whaling fleet until they could be rescued in late May and early June. But it was fortuitous because his brother had decided to resign, so EA came back to Avery Island. But he was very much a horticulturist. He was very much an ornithologist. He was very much into conservation before people knew what conservation was. When EA came back to Avery Island, and this is a picture of Avery Island, he created a reserve for egrets, because the snowy, as they said, was being hunted to extinction for their feathers. And unfortunately, the time the bird's plumage is the most beautiful and the time it was worth the most was during the nesting season. So it was a double hurt to the bird, because not only were they killing the birds for their feathers, but they were killing the birds while all of the chicks were in the nest. So all the chicks would die in the nest because there was no one to feed them. The Lacey Act protected the snowy egret. It was the first bird that was ever protected in the United States. EA did have a hand in that. The Audubon Society credits him with helping save the snowy from extinction. One of the other things that EA did was to create the Jungle Garden, and you can see in the highlighted area on the lower right, Jungle Gardens is a driving garden that tourists can come to, which he created because of auto tourism in the 1930s. This is a picture of what we call Bird City. EA actually built, snowy egrets will only nest over water. They won't nest over land. So EA built platforms out in a pond in order for them to have extra nesting space. And every year we get thousands and thousands of egrets that start to come in at the end of January or early February. And we usually have quite a few egrets to see right up until about July. Some friends of his in New York City found a very nice Buddha statue that had been pilfered from a temple in China and sent to New York to be sold. They were so enamored with it, they bought it and gave it to EA and shipped it to him in the early 1930s. He liked it so much that he actually created an entire section in his jungle gardens in a formal oriental garden to allow the Buddha to have its own temple. EA also did an extensive amount of work with the USDA on bamboo cultivation. And we have a lot of visits from the American Bamboo Society, who work with us on identifying all the various species of bamboo we have on Avery Island. The left side is a picture of EA standing in Somoso bamboo. We tend to call it timber bamboo. When I was a boy, I actually used to make money by sawing down large pieces of timber bamboo and then making cups out of them, because as you all know, each section of bamboo is solid, so you can cut it at the top just below and make a real nice cup. They didn't last long, they'd split, but the tourists would buy them from me as a boy. So. That's a Robert Young bamboo. It's a very pretty bamboo with a bright yellow cane and a leafy green top. EA was also very, very interested in camellias, and produced an enormous amount of camellias for commercial shipment. He ran a commercial nursery on Avery Island, actually had the contract to do the landscaping work for the new state capitol in Baton Rouge, and was very active in horticulture. Currently, conservation, sustainability, environmental responsibility are all things that companies are interested in. They're interested in it because their consumers are interested in it. In our case, it's a way of life. We've been doing this for over 100 years. It's not a corporate initiative. It's just part of what we do. And the commercial side of our business is Tabasco. Currently, Tabasco is being shipped to 187 countries around the world. We bottle in 22 languages and dialects. Depending on how you count, there are about 200 countries in the world. Some of them we're not allowed to ship to, say Iran. But we think we are probably in most countries in the world, even if we're not sure that we're directly shipping to them. Remember, I told you that EA made about 360,000 bottles of Tabasco in his lifetime. Currently, at Avery Island, Louisiana, we have the ability to produce about 720,000 bottles of Tabasco per day. So we can do about double a day what EA did in his lifetime. In terms of responsibility and what we're doing, we recycled 328,000 pounds of corrugated cardboard in 2014. We recycled over 38,000 pounds of cartons and paper in 2014. We sourced material as close to Avery Island as possible, resulting in lower fuel costs and less greenhouse gas emissions. We eliminated package inserts, reducing annual paper usage by 125 tons. We introduced mash waste in dormant fields as compost, decreasing landfill usage by 312 tons annually. And we upgraded from fluorescent to metal halide light fixtures in our plant, reducing our electricity charges by 33%. being green, conservation is a way of life for us. We're very honored to accept this award. Thank you all very much. They said they were leaving some time to ask questions. If anybody has any questions, I'll try to answer them, but please remember I am not a technical man. So, yes? Yes, we don't look at them as colors, we look at them as flavors, and we currently have seven. Until 1994, we had one flavor, red Tabasco. Then we used a green jalapeno, then we did a garlic with cayenne, a habanero sauce, using it's a Caribbean-based habanero sauce, so it's got a lot of fruit in it. We have a sweet and spicy sauce. Our different flavors also have different Scoville units of heat. So it's not just different peppers that we're using to get different flavors, it's also different heat levels for different foods. Regular red Tabasco is about 3,500 to 5,000 Scoville units in heat. And our mildest sauce, our sweet and spicy sauce, which is very thick, almost like an Asian chili sauce, is only about 300 Scoville units. The habanero sauce is about 7,000 Scoville units, so about twice as hot as red Tabasco. So, and yes, we do continue to develop. We just are right now working with a sriracha sauce. If y'all are familiar with sriracha out of Mr. Tron out of California. So,
where did the name Tabasco?
Good question, Jeff, and we don't know. We've been in the same place for almost 200 years. We've made Tabasco for 147 years. My family, and my wife will tell you this with a very large nod, are pack rats to the end. We never throw anything away. But we do not know where Edmund McElhenney came up with the name. We can't say definitively. We just don't know. We do know that at one time he thought the peppers may have come from the Tabasco region of Mexico. But now we're fairly certain that the origin of our product is much closer to the Amazon, not Mexico. And we actually could never find any indigenous pepper of the Tabasco pepper, capsaicin frutescens, in Mexico, in that region.
You mentioned you had 15 acres of peppers on the island. You mentioned all those countries. How many acres of production of peppers do you have?
I think we are slightly over about 6,000 acres of pepper that we're growing around the world. We actually try to grow in small plots where we can. A lot of our farmers are very small farmers. In Honduras, they use a manzana instead of an acre. Most of those plots would be 1 to 2 manzanas. Part of it is because Tabasco is very difficult to grow. It's very susceptible to lots of disease, and it can be wiped out. You can lose a whole field almost overnight. So we try to separate into small fields. We work with the same farmers over and over again, and we guarantee them a price in advance for every pound of pepper they grow to our specification. It's an annual. We supply the seed. They grow it to our specifications, and then they're guaranteed a price per pound for everything they have ready for us to harvest back. Yes? Using grafting? One of the recommendations that actually is a part of the extension, we work closely with LSU, also some with Texas A&M and some other New Mexico on peppers, people who have a lot of experience. But one of the things that the scientists have recommended to us is that we do not try to do anything to our pepper, that it's got an extremely diverse DNA. And even if we were able to do something that would breed pepper that would be better able to sustain itself through certain things now, we may breed out other things which will benefit us in the future. So as an heirloom plant that we want to continue, we're 147 years now, and we don't think we're going anywhere. They've recommended we leave it alone and accept the loss.
Yes, that is exactly why grafting might be an option. Because grafting it has been used for heirloom tomato or pepper. So the idea is you might not change the product, the food, but just change the resistance. And it has the resistance of the seed. So yes, there's definitely a concern whether you change the some of the properties of the
You're above my pay grade.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you all.